Vacuum in Munich by William Boyd. One, the invitation. Bethany Melmoth looks out of the window at the wintry spectacle of Southwark. There has been a heavy frost in the night, and the weak January sun is slowly melting it on the rooftops, revealing the wet grey tiles beneath. London in winter. Long, long dark nights. Seasonal affective disorder, Bethany thinks. Sad. She sighs and turns back to her tidy desk, and aligns her slightly misaligned stapler squarely to the desk edge, top right corner. Then she moves it to the top left corner. She wonders if she's developing a mild form of OCD. Or maybe it's a symptom of SAD. She has tidied and rearranged her desk 3 times in the last 48 hours, as well as all the icons on her computer monitor, all in neat rows, horizontal and vertical. Should she be worried? Perhaps she should buy one of those dawn simulation alarm clocks to create a mechanical sunrise. It's all because she has nothing to do, she realises. Not sad. Artrat, the magazine where she works, started out as a monthly, then became bi-monthly. A week ago, when everyone had returned from work after the Christmas break, Jason Mason, the editor, announced it was to become a quarterly. Infinitely classier, Jason said confidently when he made the announcement to the staff. All great art magazines were quarterlies. What next, Bethany wonders? An annual? She has a depressing premonition she will be looking for another job soon. She glances across the office at her 2 colleagues. Bérangère is texting. Kwame is reading The Guardian. The next issue isn't due until March, Bethany thinks. Now we are a classy quarterly. Time is already hanging heavily. What will we do all day, all week? As if in answer to her question, Jason Mason leans out of his office. Bethany, old thing, he says, could you be a star and pop out to Sarney's and get me some lunch? The usual? 2 cheese and tomato? No, actually. Pepperoni and avocado on pumpernickel, and a pastrami and avocado on rye. What's with all this avocado? Bethany asks. God's butter, darling. Bethany stands and puts on her coat. This is the high point of her day as an editorial assistant on Art Rat, fetching Jason Mason his lunch. On the stairs down to the front door, Bethany's phone rings. She checks who it is. It's her father, Zane Melmoth, calling from Los Angeles. Hi, Dad, she says. You're up extremely early. Well, perhaps you haven't gone to bed yet. What's cooking? All good, honey bun. I'm in New York, actually, on the way to the gym. How's the world of contemporary art? I've just interviewed Damien Hirst, she lies without thinking. Cool. I think he's very underrated. Bethany steps out of the door onto Southwark Street. There's a sharp, icy wind blowing. She stands in the lee of a bus shelter, wishing she'd put on her hat. Zane Melmoth is professor of psychogeography at Brandywine University in Santa Monica and the author of 2 highly successful books. What are you doing this weekend? He asks. Nothing much. I might tidy my room. Your room? I thought you had a flat. I've moved back in with Mum. God, poor you. Why on earth? Purely economic reasons, Bethany explains. Bethany's parents divorced when she was 4. They still detest each other, more than 2 decades later, a hatred that seems to grow stronger as more time elapses and they don't see or have anything to do with each other, Bethany realizes. All very paradoxical. Time is not a healer in Zane and Alana Melmoth's case. Separation made everything worse. Fancy coming to meet me in Munich, her father asks. Zane explains. He is giving a paper entitled Derivations of La Derive, a Domestic Multiverse, to a very well-funded international think tank called the Ludger Voss Foundation. All expenses paid, first-class flights, 3 nights in a 5-star hotel. Expenses. Plus a plus one, he says. But Regina can't come. Regina is Zane's third wife. Why not? Is she all right? She's great. No, L.A. to Munich and back by plane would, you know, overwhelm her carbon footprint. That's her issue. Right, of course. So I thought I'd ask my darling daughter if she'd like to come and hear her old dad give his paper. Munich, Bethany thinks. Bavaria. Never been to Munich. Plus a weekend with her father, whom she rarely sees. Yes, that would be lovely. 2. The first white lie. Munich, Bethany's mother Alana repeats. I love Munich, an Italian city in southern Germany. She looks at Bethany sharply in that way she has when she's suspicious. Why are you going to Munich? Boyfriend? No. God, no, I wish, Bethany says, thinking fast. I'm being sent to interview an artist. Nice gig. Who's the artist? Bethany's thinking accelerates. Torvald Baumgarten. He's very up and coming. Bring me back some schnapps, Alana says, returning to her magazine. My pleasure, Bethany says. 3. Munich, Saturday. As Bethany steps out of the arrivals hall at Munich Airport, she sees a tall woman in black holding up a small tablet with the name Melmoth printed on it. She wanders over. Hi, I'm Bethany. Pleased to meet you, Bethany, the tall woman says in perfect English with a very slight European-American accent. I'm Irmgard Fenstermacher from the Voss Foundation. They shake hands. Is this all your luggage? Irmgard asks, pointing to Bethany's somewhat bashed silver trolley bag. Yes, Bethany says. Irmgard seems surprised for some reason. Oh well, it is your decision after all. Shall we go find the car? On the drive into Munich in the long black Mercedes, Irmgard gives Bethany an envelope full of information about Munich, about the Ludger Voss Foundation, her father and his publications, plus 5 crisp 100 euro notes and a complimentary ticket for her father's paper that will be delivered in some conference centre on Monday night. Is this money for me? Bethany asks. It's your per diem, Irmgard explains, non-accountable. Irmgard has a lean, handsome face and white blonde hair pulled back severely from her brow and secured tightly by a tortoiseshell comb at the back of her head. She must be about 40, Bethany thinks, feeling that the word formidable would suit her brisk, polite, super-efficient persona perfectly. Her hands are ringless, the fingernails flawlessly manicured. A simple, heavy gold bracelet sits around her thin left wrist. She wouldn't like to work for Irmgard, she thinks. Give me Jason Mason any day. They pass a huge grey-white structure, round and faceted like some giant tyre lying on its side. What's that? Bethany asks, pointing. It's a stadium, Irmgard replies. The stadium from Bayern Munich, Allianz Arena. Bethany notes the small grammatical error, pleased that Irmgard isn't entirely perfect. They motor into Munich, Bethany gazing out of the window at the neat buildings with their ochre and orange roofs, and the clean streets, feeling her excitement rise, looking forward to seeing her father. Is my father already here? She asks. He's coming tomorrow, Irmgard explains. There was a small postponement, he said. Oh. Bethany feels a moment's deflation and looks out of the window again as the car turns into narrower streets and moves through a small square so neat, so ordered, it looks like a film set. What's our hotel? Bethany asks. The Mandarin Oriental Munich. I love Mandarin Orientals, Bethany says without thinking. Irmgard turns to look at her. Have you stayed in one before? Yes, Bethany says, in Tokyo. Irmgard smiles. Bethany can tell she doesn't believe her. 4. A new friend. Irmgard sees to the check-in, now talking fast German to the receptionist, pointing at Bethany standing beside her like a compliant child. Bethany is given her door key in its little paper file showing the group's well-known fan logo, and Irmgard also hands her her business card. If there's anything you need, if I can help you in the slightest way during your visit to Munich, please call me 24/7. She smiles her professional smile. Thank you, Bethany says. I'm sure I'll be fine once my father arrives. They make their farewells, and Bethany is taken up to her room by an elderly man in a busboy uniform who insists on taking her trolley bag from her. Now Bethany stands alone, looking out of the window. On this top floor, the walls have an attic slant to them. The room is large, and the view stretches out over the orange-shaded Munich roofscape. Bethany sees spires rising and the twin bulbous-topped towers of some church or cathedral. She will find out the names of these buildings and go for a long walk through the city and fill the rest of the day before it grows dark. Down in the lobby, she recognizes, on a mezzanine floor, a large hand-painted mud mural by Richard Long, one of her favourite artists. Not many people would know that, she thinks, feeling vaguely pleased with herself. The lobby is filled with a sizable group of large, tall, fit young men in their 20s, in expensive casual clothes. She can see that some are bearded, and many of them are tattooed, their necks, their wrists, and the backs of their hands, and they all seem to be wearing huge, chunky watches. A large proportion of them are listening to something, music, she supposes, on headphones. Who are these people? She quietly asks the doorman as they file out of the hotel and climb into a huge, gleaming bus. The football team from Valencia, she is told. Big match tonight with Bayern Munich. At the Allianz Arena, Bethany adds. Exact. The doorman looks at her and smiles. With respect, she thinks. Bethany steps outside and turns up the collar of her coat. It's not as cold as London, she notes, as she rolls herself a cigarette, wondering which direction to take for her promenade through the city. She searches her pocket for her lighter, but can't find it, realizing she must have left it up in her room. Damn. But then she sees another smoker standing some yards off under the wide awning of the hotel's entrance. She wanders over to him, noting that he's an older man, in his 60s perhaps, wearing a large, roomy charcoal loden coat, a battered leather bag over his shoulder, a dull red scarf at his throat, and a lick of his grey hair falling carefully over his brow. He's smoking a small, knobbled black cheroot. Entschuldigung, Bethany says, remembering her schoolgirl German all of a sudden. Haben Sie Feuer? Excusez-moi? He's French, Bethany thinks. Of course, that style. Avez-vous du feu? She asks. Of course, yes, he says, in English, fishing in his coat pocket and producing a battered Zippo lighter. He flicks up the lid. Bethany leans forward and lights a cigarette from the proffered flame. Thanks, she says. Left my lighter in my room. You are staying in the hotel? Yes, she says. Isn't it fabulous? Are you here for the match? No. Bethany explains about her father and the paper he's delivering for the Ludger Voss Foundation. The Frenchman nods as she talks, drawing on his cheroot. What's his name, you said? Mammut? Melmoth. Zane Melmoth. I'm Bethany. She offers her hand, and the Frenchman, after the briefest pause, shakes it firmly. Enchanté. My name is Hugues Duhamel. He waits a brief split second to see if she recognizes it. Bethany is familiar with these pauses. Artists do it all the time. She hasn't heard of him. Nice to meet you, Hugues. Are you here for the match? He smiles. No, I'm a writer, a novelist. My latest novel has just been translated into German. I'm giving a reading of a kind on Sunday night at the Literaturhaus. Congratulations, Bethany says, thinking, I must Google Hugues Duhamel when I get back to my room. Well, she says, I'd better go for my walk before it gets dark. Enjoy the city, Hugues says, and relights his cheroot that had gone out and gives her a casual wave. 5. Schnapps. Bethany saunters up to Maximilianstrasse and heads for the opera house with its wide square. It is indeed a bit like an Italian city, Bethany thinks, remembering her mother's words, but a solid, well-constructed one, not a crumbling facade in sight. The pastel colours, sky blue, lemon yellow, brick red, pistachio, added as an afterthought rather than something intrinsic. Thinking of Alana, she buys her a bottle of schnapps, Bauer's Obstler, made from apples and pears, a shop assistant tells her. All the talk of alcohol makes her want a drink, and she finds a cafe on Odeonplatz with some tables outside and heavy rugs to wrap yourself up in against the chill. She sips at her Riesling, consulting her phone, plotting a route to the Frauenkirche, as she now knows what the twin-towered church is called. Not too far away, she sees. Central Munich is easily traversed. She finishes her wine and is about to set off when her phone rings. It's her father. "Hey, Honeybun, are you in Munich?" Zane Melmoth inquires. "Yes, I am indeed. When are you arriving?" "Slight problem. I'm flying in Monday morning." "Great," Bethany thinks. "A whole weekend on my own in Munich." "What's the slight problem?" "Regina." "Is she sick?" "No, she just doesn't want me to go. Fear of flying." "For God's sake, Dad." I know. I'll sort it out. See you Monday morning, sweetness. Can't wait." Bethany says goodbye and clicks off. This is, she knows, typical. She has had a lifetime of her father's prevarications, disappointments, excuses, no-shows, failures. Regina, moreover, she tells herself, is a 50-year-old CEO of a chain of luxury spas called Therapositi on the West Coast, in Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, Big Sur, Carmel, and San Francisco. She's not some flaky dancer like Zane's second wife, Shishi. A very short marriage, that one. Typical. In something of a sour mood, Bethany sets off for the Frauenkirche. As she cuts up a street to Salvatorplatz, she's drawn up, as if in spooky rebuke, by an image of Zane Melmoth on a poster. Under the rubric of the Ludger Voss Forschung Stiftung is her dad, advertising his talk, staring out, smiling his mischievous smile, the image he uses on all his books, lean, unshaven, in a black V-neck T-shirt, at least 15 years out of date. Herr Professor Zane Melmoth. She turns her back on him and walks on. Her fractious mood persists, however, and she decides to stay in her room that night and order room service rather than go to a restaurant and eat alone. For a brief second, she thinks of calling Irmgard and asking if she'd like to join her for supper somewhere, but realizes that would be a bad idea. She orders a club sandwich and a bottle of Riesling. Maybe she'll watch a movie, she wonders. Saturday night in Munich, she thinks. Of course, she remembers, she could watch the match and see how her fellow hotel guests, the lads of Valencia Club de Football, are faring against the men of Fußball Club Bayern München, but she's not that interested in football. She knows that if Zane were here, he'd want to stay in and watch the match, and that annoys her. 6. Munich, Sunday. Bethany decides to go to the Englischer Garten, if only to fill a large portion of her empty day. The weather has worsened, threatening showers, but she doesn't care. In January, she knows she will not be seeing the huge park to its full advantage, but, still, it is rather agreeable to be walking through countryside in the middle of a city. She has no plan and wanders aimlessly, eventually, to her surprise, coming across a Chinese pagoda. It makes her nostalgic for London all of a sudden, thinking of the Peace Pagoda in Battersea Park, or the Great Pagoda in Kew Gardens. She thinks it strange how these very Chinese constructions seem to fit perfectly in random English park landscapes. "Bethany, bonjour!" She turns. Hugues Duhamel, wrapped up in his big loden coat, is sitting on a bench to one side of the main pathway, smoking. Bethany joins him and rolls a cigarette. Hugues lights it with his trusty Zippo. "How was your Saturday night?" he asks. "I stayed in the hotel. I was in a bad mood," she confesses, and tells him about Zane's postponement and late arrival. "I had dinner with my German publisher," Hugues says. "I ate too much. I am in indigestion world. Can you say that?" "Oh, yes." "I have a question for you, Bethany," Hugues says, and rummages in his bag. He pulls out a book. It's a German edition. The title is Vacuum Verpackt. "This is my novel, translated from French." "Right. What's the title in French?" Bethany asks. "Sous vide." "I like this title very much." He tells her about the novel he wrote. It is about a father-daughter relationship that turns sour because of the daughter's mental problems. Father and daughter are particularly close, but she is anorexic and self-harms. Eventually, the father can't take it anymore and leaves the family. There is a wife and a son in the picture as well. When the father leaves, the daughter commits suicide. It's not a happy story, Hugues says, and something about the expression on his face makes Bethany wonder if it is a true story. Not a happy story, Hugues repeats, but with happy consequences. I've been a big bestseller in France, very big. I won a prize, the Prix Montaigne, and with it came a cheque for 100,000 euros. Now I am rich, and now I'm being published everywhere, here in Germany, Japan, Turkey, Brazil, everywhere, even in England. Congratulations, Bethany says, I'll buy it. My question, Bethany, Hugues says, turning to look for a moment at the pagoda and flicking away the stub of his cheroot, is how would you translate sous vide in English? Bethany thinks, vacuum packed, I suppose. Exactly. This is what my English publisher has proposed, but I don't like it. He holds up the German edition, and I don't like vacuum verpackt either. There is no mystery, no magic like you have with sous vide. I see what you mean, Bethany frowns, thinking. Surely there must be a better title for the English readers, he says almost plaintively. Vacuum packed. He switches to French. C'est moche. Bethany knows what this means. Unpleasant, ugly, displeasing. You're absolutely right, she says. Let me have a think. Hugues inhales and stands up and stretches his arms out. He's a tall, big man, Bethany thinks, looking up at him. Would you like to have lunch with me? He asks. Bethany's phone rings. It's her father. Hey, honey bun, he says. So sorry, I'm not going to make it. I think Regina's having a nervous breakdown. I have to get back to L.A. 7. Literaturhaus. Bethany sits in the darkness of the lecture theatre in the Munich Literaturhaus, amongst the packed audience, listening to a famous German actor she's never heard of read a chapter of Hugues' novel in German. Hugues sits there on the brightly spotlit stage beside the moderator of the reading, staring intently at the floorboards. He's looking smart in a grey suit, white shirt and vivid pink tie. Bethany lets the incomprehensible words flow over and through her. It's a kind of blessed release, almost an out-of-body experience, she thinks, washing away all the anger she feels about her father and his craven, useless, flim-flam, unreliable, useless, unreliable, undependable, feckless, self-indulgent, unthinking, irresponsible persona. She stops herself. Nothing to be gained by ranting and venting, she tells herself. Just listen to the words of Vacuum Verpackt. After the reading, she and Hugues walk back to the Mandarin Oriental Hotel, both enjoying a perambulatory smoke. I think it went well, Bethany said. The audience was incredibly quiet, you know, rapt, concentrating. All German audiences are like that, Hugues says. They are the most respectful audiences in the world. Oh, right, well, it was very impressive. Have you thought of a title for my novel in English? I'm working on it. They turn down Neuturmstrasse, and there are the flags and the bright lights of the hotel welcoming them. I think we need a drink, Hugues says. As they stroll into the lobby, Bethany spots a familiar figure at reception, Irmgard Fenstermacher standing there, wearing a Shetland jumper, a pair of jeans and trainers, her hair pulled back in a loose ponytail. For a second, Bethany thinks it may be an imposter, a doppelganger, but the cold professional smile establishes that it is, indeed, the real Irmgard, a very cold smile. See you in the bar, Bethany says to Hugues and goes to greet Irmgard. Hi, Irmgard, I almost didn't recognize you. Your father has cancelled, Irmgard says bitterly. Yes, I heard. This has never happened before from the Voss Foundation. What can I say? Bethany feels an unfamiliar panic in her chest, the curse of Zane Melmoth. I'm very disappointed also. I came all the way from London to... We will not be paying for your room tonight, and we will be invoicing your father for the expenses incurred. Flights, hotel, per diem. Look, it's nothing to do with me. I'm sorry, Bethany. He has caused a very big problem for us. 1,000 tickets, publicity. It is unforgivable. What am I meant to say? Bethany says, more plaintively than she means. What am I meant to do? What seems to be the problem? Oog has suddenly appeared. Bethany introduces him. It's clear that Irmgard knows exactly who he is. She seems instantly demure, respectful, not the intransigent ice maiden anymore. She explains a problem about Zane Melmoth's sudden cancellation of his paper and its multifarious consequences. I'll pay for Bethany to stay tonight, Oog says with a careless shrug. I will take care of it. You can relax. Imgard's fluster increases. Please, madame, Oog says. The matter is closed. He turns to Bethany. Shall we go and have our drink? 8. Homeward bound. Bethany tries calling Oog's room in the morning before she leaves, but there is no reply. In the taxi to the airport, she rebooked her flight home the night before. She finally reaches him on his mobile. Thank you for everything, she says. Thank the judges of the Pre-Montaigne who made me so rich, he says. Normally I would have offered you the sofa in my room. Well, it's much appreciated. I'll make sure my father pays you back. Don't think about it. It was a pleasure to meet you, Bethany. It made Munich, he pauses, more special, more interesting. I think I've got a title for you, she says. Oh, yes? In a vacuum, she says, slowly. Silence. I like it. Good. I'll get in touch when I come to London for publication, Oog says, for the publication of In a Vacuum. We can have another drink. That would be wonderful. Merci, Bethany. À la prochaine. 9. The second white lie. So, what was he like, this Torvald Baumgarten? Alana asks as she slips the spaghetti into the boiling water. Well, bit of a tosser. Rather full of himself, you know, Bethany says. That smells delicious, she adds, trying to change the subject. Is he a painter? Paint? You must be joking. No, full-on conceptual. It was some massive installation, Bethany thinks, surprised at her inventiveness, to do with waste, you know, a whole gallery filled with black plastic bags full of rubbish, but real rubbish, stinking. I almost vomited. I can't believe these people, Alana says, reaching for her cigarettes, and they make money from all this crap. She looks at Bethany and smiles. Thank you for my schnapps. As long as you feel it wasn't a waste of your precious time, my darling. Oh, no, it wasn't a waste of time at all, Bethany says. Actually, I really enjoyed myself. It was great.